Welcome to the best damn podcast ever. My name is Blake Buck, and co-hosting with me this week, we've got...
A bag of dicks.
You gotta do that again.
I fucked it up. I thought you said it.
Oh my god.
Welcome to the best damn podcast ever. My name is Blake Buck, and co-hosting with me, we've got William Matrix Mouth Miller.
How you doing, Blake Buck?
And we've also got Justin Ficarotta.
How you guys doing?
Guys, we're back! In black.
Nope.
Or Blake, internet, or whatever.
We already agreed on this. We're not going to acknowledge the fact that there's been such a large lapse in shows.
Yeah, well, now, I was looking.
There's been a lapse in shows?
Exactly.
You know, some people would say a week is a bit of a lapse. Some people would say, you know, 2 weeks is a bit of a lapse. Let's try, like, 8 months. You know, whatever. All right, the truly dedicated would have stayed with us.
That's true. Their forums overridden by pornography and viruses. Their website in shambles.
Yeah.
Their host's gone. Battlecat is probably dead. Who knows?
Dude, you know, I'm not.
And this is before we stop recording shows.
But we're back now. A new Big Hot Show should be available. Excuse me, not Big Hot Show. A new Best Damn Podcast Ever should be available in its own. No longer affiliated with the virus and sadness of BigHotShow.com. And we're going to start putting out shows every week, right, guys? Totally.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Even if we don't believe it.
We really
just,
don't.
Just stop I listening. Why would you?
Well, like you said, there has been no laughs. I'm actually getting kind of sick recording these every week. We need to take a break or something.
So I guess maybe before we get started, let's get an update in everybody's lives. William Miller, what has been happening with you over the past little ways?
So William Miller changed jobs.
Okay.
He is now a garbage man. I pick up trash in Baltimore.
With your muscles.
With my muscles.
Thinking about it.
No, I work for Big Huge Games now. I'm a game designer. Big Huge Games.
Okay. Yep. Justin, what about you?
I am still at Freeverse. I am a producer and designer now. And we are we're sort of diving into the whole free to play world as well. So we've been purchased at least 8 times now.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I forget. Aren't you owned by some big Japanese conglomerate now? DNA?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that what we are now owned
by Godzilla.
Now, see, I would just imagine the day this happened, right? I see, who is it, like, Ian and Colin? I can just imagine this, like, very wealthy, like, Japanese businessman walks up with a briefcase of cash, opens it up, and says nothing, and they just grab it and run out the door.
At least it's not a briefcase of skulls, like the last time you got bought by
Enjimoko. Yeah, I told you about the bag of skulls. Well, the Japanese went to Enjimoko's offices, emptied a sack of skulls. and the deal was final.
All right. Well, for me, I was working at a real radio station. I guess it wasn't fake before, but I moved on to another station. I worked all right there for a while, but you know what? I forgot. You know, I recorded a podcast with some friends of mine. I never released it, but I was like, man, I really miss doing this. I don't like doing radio. I'm done. I quit the job. Podcast time. So hopefully around the time you're hearing this, I'm also going to be launching another podcast over at BlakeBuck.com. So check that out if you're interested. It's time for the show. This is your best damn podcast ever for... Oh, fuck.
March 1st.
February 1st, 2011. All right, this week on the show, we've got the PSP2. Has been announced today, in fact. We'll be talking about that a little bit. The Kinect, actually not an abysmal failure. Russian bombing has drawn some criticism to Activision. And Vic, what was your news? I forgot your news.
PlayStation Suite to bring PS1 games to the Android.
Okay. Also, we've got a couple of judgments for you. A jank. We might get to a topic, your feedback, and a lot more fun. William Miller, kick us off with this PSP nonsense.
All right, Blake Buck. We got the PSP2. Now, we've known for a long time that this thing has been in the works. We've seen a bunch of prototype screenshots or mock-ups or whatever. We saw that weird Sony Ericsson hybrid PSP phone thing that nobody's going to buy. We all thought that was going to be it, but no, apparently not. The next generation platform, as it's being called, the NGP, was announced today. It's got about the same form factor as the original dual analog sticks, touchscreen. It's got 6-axis wiggle controls, 2 cameras, a rear and a front.
So it's an iPhone.
Best thing, it doesn't make calls. It does have a GPS, I guess. But the best thing about this thing, by far, is that it takes tapes.
Wait, oh really? I thought it didn't.
Still? Oh
no
my
more,
God,
no
really?
No more UMDs. No. It has 2 proprietary flash formats.
Lord.
One for storage and one for games. That means tapes, gentlemen.
Well, I guess...
Miller loves tapes.
I guess I like that better than those awful UMDs they had.
Yeah, it's a step forward, but do they really need to do tapes at all?
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like with, you know, the iPhone and they got the App Store, they're trying to do the, you know, PlayStation App Store similarly. I guess a large portion of the gaming populace does still... But, I mean, if it's Wi-Fi enabled, I mean, who... I mean, I think we're at the point where it's like, who doesn't have Wi-Fi these days, you know?
Now, I'm sure that they're going to have some kind of app store similar to what they have on the PSP Go right now. And I think the original PSP is the same thing. Like, I think that's done pretty well. But at the same time, I think they want that shelf presence that things like, you know, iPhone doesn't have. But iPhone doesn't seem to be hurting without shelf presence.
You know,
I don't know why they're hanging on to that.
iPhone's still making... You know, I think the biggest advantage this has, even though I know relatively little about it, it's got sticks and buttons. I don't have to lay my hands all over my screen to play.
One thing I was looking at it's got the 2 sticks, right? So William Miller was wondering how you're going to control a game with 2 sticks. I mean, you got the 2 bumpers, but if you got both thumbs on the sticks and 2 fingers on the bumpers, that doesn't leave you with a lot. If you think about the Xbox controller,
it doesn't have buttons.
It's got buttons. I mean, it's got a D-pad and it's got four buttons, but it's got 2 sticks. But you don't want to have to lift your finger off the stick to push the button.
Yeah,
but
that's called like every game ever. What are you talking? Like Halo is a dual stick.
This is no different from 360
sticks. I know,
sticks.
But it is a problem.
It's like, not a problem. Okay,
would you shut up for just a second? It's a problem. It's a usability issue. Like, there's not a really good solution to it because. You know, it's a tough problem. You want the dual analog control at the same time. You want to be able to access buttons and all that stuff. But I think that one of the things I noticed on here is that there is a rear-facing touch surface on this thing. So there's like 2 small strips of touch-sensitive material on the back. And so you've got the sticks, the 2 bumper buttons, and then this touch stuff on the back. I don't know.
Why would you want touch on the back? Like, who's going to hang on, game? I need to rub on you for a minute. Like,
think about your driving tape. All right.
Okay.
You got throttle. That's 1 touch.
Well, I like that.
And you got missiles. That's the other touch.
You need analog control for missiles? Do you want to shoot 1 or 100 missiles?
Yeah. Slider. Missile slider. Anyway, I think it's kind of cool. Who knows how developers will use it. But
just to get back to what you're talking about, dude, have you not played a console game in like the past 20 years? The dual stick and button setup is the industry standard for like 10, 15 years now, dude.
Yeah, people said that about phones with buttons too. I'm just saying that it's not that people can't use it, but it's sort of there's a fundamental flaw to it that will eventually be addressed somehow.
I feel like the DualShock style or the Xbox style of controller is about the zenith of control. You can't really get much better in terms of like being able to access multiple input methods at once. You've got analog on the triggers, you know, like precise XY on your thumbs, and then buttons for extra options. I think that's as good of controls in video games you can get with the human hand right now.
Yeah, for hardcore games, there's nothing wrong with the layout of the controls and the NGP.
I don't say that people can't use them really well. I'm just saying that ergonomically, there may be a different solution out there. That's all I'm saying.
You just love touchscreen.
William Miller's a thinker.
You just love swiping. That's all you want to do.
He's thinking all the time about things.
Put your hands in a mason jar surrounded by buttons. Is that what you want?
Something like that.
All right. Well,
I'm always excited about Sony's hardware. Like everything they've ever, you know, like hardware wise has always impressed me. It's just, you know, I don't know.
They almost feel like the Me Too, you know? It's like they got a couple of developers that are their own, you know, the God of War, but not near as many as they had, you know, even 5 years ago.
Yeah, also, their platforms never really get the support that that you would expect with that kind of hardware. Because, like, I remember the PSP 1 came out, and the thing is, I still love the PS, you know, all the PSPs I think are hot. But just no one makes fucking games for them.
Yeah, has there been a killer app lately on PSP? I mean, what is it? Tell me, I've had a PSP for years, I hadn't touched it. What's the killer app?
Luminous.
This guy.
Well, some people say, like, that Metal Gear. Dude, so done with Metal Gear. Who's like, oh, yeah, another Metal Gear. Sweet.
Is Metal Gear still a game? Do you play it at all? Do you just watch it?
At this point, I would
cut the game part out.
Now, what about, is there a big software, you know, do they have any big titles behind this?
Well, I'm sure it'll support their entire back catalog if they can get the media on the device, you know, via online or tapes or whatever.
Right, but it's the
there've been a lot of announcements too on, you know, so and so is bringing their game to this new platform. I think there is a surge of support. It's just a question of how much of that is going to deliver. I mean, there was I did see something about because I follow John Carmack on his Twitter, and John Carmack is very impressed with this with the low-level APIs that you get can actually... The games and shit you can run on this will actually run so much better than what you would expect from a device of this speed. But yes. The question is, how many people can develop for that besides John Carmack?
Right, that was the problem when the PS3 came out. For those of you who don't develop software for this thing, when it came out, the tool chain and the APIs were so primitive that it was very slow to adopt. Whereas, you know, Xbox, you just... You write your code in Visual Studio, you push go, and it works. It's gotten a lot better since then, and I hope with the release of the PSP 2, they'll have better developer support.
Well, you know, I even begin to question, what is the role of graphics in gaming anymore? You know, I'm on my iPhone, right? I got the new iPhone tape, love it a lot. And have you guys played this Infinity, I think it's called Infinity Blade? I think, like,
yeah,
Evan Chair put it out.
Right. Infinity Blade game.
Yeah.
And you look at it, and, you know, I understand that it's really just kind of tricking you into thinking it looks so good. I know it doesn't really look, you know, it's a lot of bump mapping, but it looks extremely impressive. And to the lay person, they would say, this is just as good as Xbox graphics, you know? And it's like, you know, when games are, you know, Dead Space, right? It's on PS3, it's on Xbox, and it's on the phone, right? It seems like, I don't know, games are so scalable in terms of their graphics nowadays that you can really trick a lot of people. And I don't know what am I trying to say? I'm trying to say maybe graphics aren't so important. It seems like we've maybe hit a wall in some respects.
Game graphics, Blake, have always been tricks, right?
Oh, I mean, I know that.
They're always tricks. It's just you can do a little bit more of the tricks that we're used to now on the mobile devices. I think the scariest part of hardware getting so much better is the cost of making software for it. I mean, if a game costs like $80 now, $70 now, whatever, you know, it takes 4 years to make with 100 people. Imagine how bad that's going to be when you get PlayStation 4. It's got twice the graphics hardware, and the expectation is that you make a game that looks twice as good.
Now, again.
Well, the thing is, you make a game that looks twice as good, it also takes three times as long to make and three times as much money. Like, that's kind of what happened with, you know, all these HD systems now. Like, everyone's jumping on high def, and, you know, the graphics have to be bigger and badder and better, and all the models have to be, you know, more complex, and it's just it balloons up, you know, the development costs and times on these games, and that's not the generation that they need to be going right now, and that's why things like the iPhone are sort of sneaking ahead and sort of becoming the platform to beat now, is just because all these games require, you know, $20 million+ to make now, require 2 years of, you know, teams of 5 billion people to make, right. And it's just, you know, fucking Angry Birds is outselling all of them.
Oh, don't even get me started on that goddamn game.
You go play Infinity Blade for like 10 minutes, and then you spend your entire life playing a game like Angry Birds. I mean, it's just, okay. Like, I think it, you're right, Blake, it doesn't matter, especially on those mobile platforms. And even on you know, the HD ones too, really simple games, take like Geometry Wars or something. I got a lot of enjoyment out of that, even though it took like, you know, 3 weeks to make it.
I mean, you guys are forgetting that there is the indie game development scene right now is at a peak that it has never seen in its entire lifespan ever.
Agreed.
Even if you compare it to the shareware days of the, you know, early 90s, it's way bigger than that. You can make, I mean, Angry Birds dudes. I'm gonna be honest with you about Angry Birds. I don't fucking get it. You got the birds, you shoot them at the bricks, and the bricks fall over. What's the fucking point? I can play it, you know, I'm taking a shit, I'll play it for a second, all right? How did this game become number one in the App Store for months and months? It's on the Mac App Store, number one on the Mac App Store for weeks now. It's such a huge game, and yet it seems so simple. I don't really get... Or Facebook games, right? Like, they're inherently very simple, but they suck people in for huge amounts of time. Is addiction the like what we're striving for now in the game world in terms of design?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for Facebook games. I'm not a big fan of those myself. But things like Angry Birds are games that, you know, gameplay wise, they do one thing very, very well. Like that, like they're, you know, Angry Birds is nothing besides you put a bird in a slingshot and you fling it into a fucking brick wall. You know, that's all you do, just over and over and over again. Right. There's no mini games, there's no fishing, there's no waggle controls, there's no nothing.
Oh man, I need waggle.
It's just slingshot, bird, wall, go.
Yeah. And like,
and then all these, you know, all these games, like graphically, they're not the most complicated things. But and you mentioned indie games, like all these games now have their style of graphics as a style choice, you know, like,
right.
I just played that indie game VVVVVV. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have played
that game. It's hard. Like, I tried playing that game. It's hard.
Yeah,
it's like Atari graphics, but it looks phenomenal. Yeah, it's because it was a deliberate style choice.
You know what happened when I played that game? I played for about 10 minutes, and I was like, oh, I see. This is a Fick game. This isn't a Blake game. And I'm done. Sort of like Super Meat Boy. I like this game. I appreciate it, but if I played it, I'd hate myself. Here's my question. Here's what I'm trying to get at. I think that, you know, with indie games the way they are, I think there's always, from now and forever, which it didn't always used to be this way, I think there's always going to be an avenue for the little guy to make a mountain of money. I think there is this avenue because of the internet, because distribution of gaming is so easy now. I think that's the bar, since the bar of entry is so low that you can have a hit, you know, with next to nothing in terms of development costs.
Every platform now has a development channel that is not GameStop.
Right.
So, you know, XBLA, PSN, App Store, WiiWare, all, you know, just...
It's great.
People who have a good idea for a game don't have to fight for shelf space, they have to deal with distribution, and put it online and sell it.
And I think 10 years from now, when, you know, we got PS Triple and it's 3D and it's blowing our mind, I think you're still going to see games like Angry Birds with very simple graphics and very rudimentary gameplay that'll still kind of, like, you know, sweep people up in it. I think we're at the point now where, at least in terms of the indie world, graphics aren't the big limiting factor.
I think that's absolutely true, and I think it's pretty obvious that the landscape converges to that. I mean, look at literature, right? You have the novel and you have the poem. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing, you know, the short form, the long form.
Right.
In films, you got the short film and you got the long film. I mean, some make more money than others, obviously, but there are breakout hits on both sides of that spectrum. And I think that the same thing can exist in games too, and it already does, and it has. You know, since we started making them, really. So I agree. I don't think it's anything new. It's just more obvious because we see it on our Xbox now. We see it on our PlayStation now.
I don't like books.
Yes, I know that.
Dude, I saw a Kindle today. Dude, I like books now.
All that thing does is read or show you books. You know that, right, Blake?
But
there aren't any...
It's a screen. I get it. I understand that.
There's no picture. Well, I guess there are pictures. But
dude, I'm getting one. It's hot.
What are you going to do?
Look, don't judge me for making excuses for buying electronics, okay? I have to have it. It's like when iPad. Nobody needs an iPad, but they're like, I got to have it. And they buy it.
Dude,
No, you don't. Didn't nobody who ever owned an iPad do anything useful with it?
Dude, I had no idea what the hell I was going to use an iPad for until I bought one, and now I use it for fucking everything.
Everything, yeah. I take that thing to work because I'm in meetings all the time. I need to be able to, you know, check email, respond to
I'll take your laptop everywhere.
Requests. No, I don't want to take my laptop everywhere. That's too much.
You
want to
look like
iPad.
A hipster.
I can whip it out real fast.
Yeah,
like,
there it is.
Like, it's so convenient. I love it. I love my iPad. I take it all everywhere. It's great at work. But you know, back to books, Blake. You're not going to get away from this. What was the last book Blake Buck read?
Well, I got to read a bunch for class. Y'all know I'm still in college. Like, oh my God. Graduation are coming, but good Lord. I got to read all these books. I guess the last book I read was, I guess Hunter S. Thompson. I read his book, The Fear and Loathing. I read that like a year ago, maybe. I can't read. All right, dude, it takes me forever to read. That's why I need a Kindle. All right.
Is that going to help
you
read?
Shh. Don't judge me.
All right.
They need to make a Kindle that reads to you in Patrick Stewart's voice.
All right, so anything else we want to wrap up on the PSP2 here?
My official prediction, it's a hot piece of hardware. Everyone's going to love it, and no one's going to write games for it.
Mm.
I agree with Fick. I think I'll convince myself to buy one and then never play it.
Right, just like the Kindle. There you go. We've all got our vices, all right? All right,
Fick. What you got?
All right, so more PlayStation news. Sony is also bringing a lot of classic PlayStation 1 games to Google's Android platform.
Hmm. Now, so, it seems like a strange move when they're so in bed with Ericsson, who makes phones and all that jazz, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I honestly I'm kind of excited about it. Like, I don't play Android. I mean, I've seen a couple of their devices just for, you know, just for porting purposes for some of our stuff. And Android phones are just they're abysmal. I can't stand them.
Dude, my friend's got an Android. I love it. I wish I had one. Everything is free on the Android. Everything that costs money is free on the Android. It's great. I mean, sure, there's still, you know, paid apps and all that, but I don't know. I like that it's
everything,
the architecture.
Everything is free on the Android, but it's butt. Like, we were talking about this before the show. The eventuality of open source software, unless it's made for Apple, is just ass. Like, it never looks good. It never functions properly. It's never polished because some asshole in his basement, not getting paid, put it together.
Right, but there's cool stuff.
Open source software puts the ass in Audacity. that's why I'm not using it anymore.
Audacity. I could rattle off a couple. OpenOffice, Audacity, Blender, that god awful 3D animation program. Oh man, what else? Just look around the room. Y'all keep talking.
Look around the room. You keep them on your wall or something. What was I gonna say? No, but
These open source sheets.
You know, I'm into music. I do DJ and music production stuff. There's a lot of really cool stuff out there for free on the Android. You know, OSC and MIDI control for Android.
I got you one. Linux. It's terrible software.
I've heard that there's
which of the 10,000 versions of it.
Case in point.
Now I've heard that there's actually decent versions that are equally comparable to Windows or Mac these days.
Right, so
I'm sure.
Whenever I'm on a Linux machine, I ask myself, do I want my software to work? And if I answer no, I continue to use that machine. If I say yes, then I leave and find another machine.
I don't know.
I want my software to work.
You champion Apple though, but Apple does a lot of things I don't like. You know, there's a lot of things I don't like about the iPhone.
Now listen, I'd take Windows over Linux any day because my shit works on that.
No, yeah, I could see that. And it's not as bad. Dude, I hadn't used Windows in years. I looked at it and I was like, oh, look at this. This is a nice Mac improvement over what I used use.
It's still built on that cheap.
No, I know. I know.
Foundation.
But I mean, like,
it's still Windows underneath, believe me.
When I used to use Windows on my old ROM box, I mean, the thing crashed probably about every week. You know, I'd have to go and fix some massive problem on it. Now, I know this is not most people's experience, but ugh. Ugh.
Anyway, what were you? I'm sorry to interrupt. I just had to interject. Open source software.
Oh,
it sucks.
Apple. You know, they lock. They're trying to lock down Flash. You know, they're trying to. You know, they're trying to promote their. They're not always the most open company because they're trying to make money.
Look. First of all, you can. They rescinded that thing. You can now use. I mean, you could develop a Flash cross compiler, no problem. Second of all, they let you write your shit in C++. Just man up, all right?
No, but it's...
Man up.
All right.
That's all you developers out there complain you can't make things for phone because it doesn't support Flash. Just man up.
All right.
I never got the whole open buzzword either. I mean, Apple is a company. You know, of course they're not going to be fucking open. No one's fucking open.
No, Google I know that, but I know that. And it's a line you got to find between, you know, being open and promoting, you know, a community of development and open ideas and also making money off of that exact same thing because you're a company. And it's a fine line, and sometimes, you know, I feel that Apple steps too far on one side or the other. Anyway.
But at the same
I think it was to prevent, you know, for instance, if an open market means that I'm going to go, you know, see like 100 copyright infringing soundboard apps or, you know, ringtones from pop artists or, you know, a ripped off Nintendo Mario soundboard, you know, it's like, how much of this garbage can I wade through before I just, you know, jump out of my fucking window?
Now, I think the App Store has just as much garbage. There's a lot of garbage on there, but I think the big thing that Apple sidestepped that Android is going to be plagued for as long as it exists is the hardware fragmentation. There are so many SKUs of Android phones, and not only is the hardware different, but the fundamental way you interact with the phone is different. We got Aaron, my old roommate, at HTC Evo for Christmas. That was his Christmas present. And that phone looks nothing like a Google phone. It looks nothing like, you know, any other Android phone out there. It's like completely different, but it's supposedly Android. And it confuses the customer, and it makes it impossible to develop software for all the phones. So if you wanted to put there's a great article about the Angry Birds guys. They wanted to put their Angry Birds on Android. They had to like rewrite that game 11 times for 11 different phones.
Jesus Christ.
Like, are you kidding me?
I know that's a bad idea. I mean, I get that. And I understand that having like uniform things are good. But like, okay, for instance, take this. There's no pornography apps on the iPhone store, right? Not that I want to go out and download Playboy, but, you know, it's like, why? The reason that exists is because Apple doesn't want the negative PR to impact their profits, right? So instead of being open and saying, oh, you can make whatever you want, they are valuing their money over that openness. You see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying, Blake.
They're valuing their market.
Their market. And
their experience.
The same restrictions apply for just about every other device we use. Take Xbox, take PlayStation 3, take your PSP. You can't make porn games for those either, but you don't get... They're just as closed and locked. In fact, they are even more closed down and locked up than iPhone.
Okay.
You have to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to be a developer.
I've never seen a breast.
Ever.
Blade Buck, you have a porno app on your phone. It's called Safari. Type in breast in Safari.
My point is that like sometimes it's a company's job to take a stance, you know, and I guess it's, you know, I guess they're looking after, you know, their market, but
Well, the thing is they both have taken a stance. So Apple's stance is they want to preserve the integrity of the experience of buying apps, and they don't want to have you, you know, wade through. I mean, there is still garbage on the App Store, but it's nothing compared to what's on Android.
Yeah, exactly.
There's more garbage on the Android, dude. Way more, because there's just more apps, or there's way more garbage on iPhone than Android, because there's like a billion times more iPhone apps than Android. Yeah, you can't say, oh, Android's garbage. It's just the same.
It's not. The vast majority of Android apps are inferior to...
I think that's an Apple fanboy just falling out of you.
Okay.
Put him back in, William.
I'm just saying. put them back in. Okay. All right, I got one more thing I want to talk about before we roll on to Blake Buck's news. This is good. We can make a quick tangent here. I was browsing y'all ever use Kickstart? I know, Blake, you haven't used Kickstart.
I'm familiar with it.
Oh, you're familiar? Okay, so essentially what Kickstart is it's this website you can go to. You see all these little projects that people are trying to do, and they need a little bit of money to get them done. And you can donate money to these projects, and they repay you somehow, like, you know, a credit, or they give you a free copy or something. Okay. Anyway, it's a way for small projects to get a little bit of funding to get off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for a long time, well, not a long time, but relatively long period of time, there's been the Indie Fund, which is a group of independent developers, Jonathan Blow amongst them, the big ones, right? Derek Yu, Jonathan Blow, I think Genova Chin's in on, I don't know, those guys. They put together a fund for funding like 3 or 4 independent games for 2 years. And I thought that was pretty cool because that's, you know, a good way to get games that would otherwise not be made off the ground. But there's a new website that was released within the last couple of days called 8bitfunding.com. Mm-hmm. I think that's the website. Anyway, it's a it's a kickstart for indie games in the range of like, you know, $500 to $2,000 worth of funding needed.
Hmm.
And I thought that was a really cool idea. I just wanted to mention that. We're talking about like the rise of the indie developer or whatever. There are not only are there tools for indies to use to build their games, but also financial instruments that they can use to fund them, which I think is really neat.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So anyway, I'm going to start a page with my I'm going to make a game about Blake. Yeah, it's actually going to be kind of like that Old Spice commercial with Ray Lewis, where he has like 8 heads. I don't know. It's in my head right now. I'll think about it.
All right, so I got two quick news stories for you. Apparently, now I don't keep up in world news. You know, I don't look at me. But apparently, I'll just summarize it for you. I think on Monday or something, there was a attack in a busy Russian airport. There was a bombing, a couple, you know, people died, a lot of people injured. And so now they're kind of looking at this. They're like, Russian airport where people got massacred. The finger has been pointed at Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 and Activision as being, you know, a potential source or inspiration or what have you for the attack.
Every time we get some atrocity like this, same thing happened in Arizona when that senator was shot. Same thing. Like, they point the finger at Vigi Games immediately. The press loves to do that. I don't think these terrorists were like, hey, guys, I just played this new Call of Duty tape. You know where we should
no,
have
I
our
agree.
Shooting?
No, I
check
understand.
The shit
no,
out
no,
for
I understand that.
No,
I understand
that did not happen.
Okay, but...
I mean, it bears similarity in a gross sense, but it's not...
You're saying, okay, now, I don't know if I... You know, I used to be in the video games, you know, don't kill people, blah, 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 right? I don't know. I think video games do desensitize us to violence, at least some, just like all other forms of media do. And do these potential contribute to already problematic people?
Yeah, sure. I'm sure. Well, the thing is, just like any other media, it'll do that. But you can't point the finger at a game that kind of resembles what happened.
But
just because
the whole gaming industry has like this knee jerk, like, oh, how preposterous! How preposterous you would even consider there's a possible link ever. And it's like, well, you know. I know it's not really linked, but I can see
the thing is from outside the industry, it's easy to see it and say, "Oh, games are desensitizing people to violence." But the thing is, you know, when you're playing games, you start to realize what is actually happening. Like, you're not, you know, like say someone's running through Grand Theft Auto and they're killing hookers with dildos and they're, you know, running them over in their car and jacking all their money. And that seems like a really horrible thing to do. It's like, oh my god, how could you kill a hooker with a dildo and jack her cash? But the thing is, people playing games don't see that. It's not desensitizing it. It's they've broken the game down to its fundamentals, and they see that, you know, the hooker is this obstacle, and the object of the game, whether it be to make money or whatever, it's no different from eating a power up in Pac-Man. You know, gamers can break a game down to its fundamental mechanics, and they operate on that. You know, people who play Grand Theft Auto are not learning how to jack cars and kill hookers. You know, they see press this button to activate this power up to do this, and you get this cool thing in the game.
Right.
I mean, it's really not. It doesn't even have
I think the reason that it
doesn't even have a corresponding element in the real world.
I think that the reason this particular instance of this has gotten on my nerves is that particular part of the scene in question of Modern Warfare 2, it felt kind of like a publicity stunt. It's like, this isn't really essential to the plot.
Like, okay, just, I saw.
You didn't think you didn't think that at all.
I saw the pictures when it was happening, the video from this thing, right? Somebody went and a suicide bomber went and detonated a bomb in an airport. That's what happened. There wasn't a group of Russian dudes walking into the airport mowing people down with guns. The similarity is that it occurred in an airport. I do not think the people that planned it were like, hey, let's make a statement by copying this video game, guys.
My point is that, okay, the original sequence in that game, this is separate of like the shooting or whatever. Didn't it feel a little contrived to you guys? Did you play it? It felt a little like a contrived, like, oh, we're going to get a rise out of news sites for this, you know?
You know, I had exactly the opposite reaction to that scene. I thought playing through that game, I thought it was one of the few instances in a video game where violence has been leveraged in a way that was sort of profound to me. And I know that's probably reading a little too much
profound.
Into it, but for me, yeah, it was profound. It was like, There's a duality that game sets up for the player, for the aesthetically sensitive player like myself. You know, you have to progress the story. That's what the game is telling you to do. But at the same time, you have to do something that's so contrary to your morality, killing innocent people or whatever, to do that, that there's this conflict. And that's what great art does. Like, it creates those kinds of feelings in you of conflict and of resolution and catharsis. And I thought that it did that. It did that for me, at least. And maybe that was not the intent, but I sure see something there that I don't normally see in games.
That's true.
Yeah, I found that to be one of the more powerful scenes I've seen in a game in a while.
Exactly.
But that game has no story. My point is that, like, that game is just a random scattershot of events. And it was like,
no, it's not.
Oh, let's put...
Did you play through the whole thing?
Yeah, it's like, oh, now you're in, you're getting blown up by a bomb, and now you're underwater shooting a Mexican, and now you're in space, and it's like... The game barely had a plot. And so
it wasn't a linear narrative, Blake. That's the only difference. I mean, there are plenty of books and movies and shit like that out there that don't have one protagonist plotting through act A, B, and C. I mean, it was different. And maybe that's what you weren't responding to, but I don't think that makes it any less powerful of a narrative. I mean, I thought it did a pretty good job. But plus, that game is not about the story.
Well, I think that all games should be about the story, at least on some level. I mean, you don't have to have the deepest, you know, thing going, but it shouldn't just be, let's throw random elements together. That's what that game felt like to me, was random settings pieced together. I mean, it was still fun.
I think part of that was, you know, there's a committee meeting where they're like, hey, we're going to make this new Call of Duty. What are the absolute coolest places we could set this thing? But at the same time, I think there's a meeting like that for every large media endeavor. You know, or even books, like when an author sits down to write a book, they're like, what's the most interesting place I can set this scene? And they do
right,
that.
But sometimes,
and that's just a tool that they use to make it more effective. And I don't think that makes it any less, you know, I don't think that lessens the work at all.
I think it actually enhances it. I think the lack of one linear narrative in those games is why that becomes more powerful, because you are just... You know, like you're just a soldier. Like, you have a name, and you'll have the names of several soldiers all throughout the game, and there really is no, you know, there's no heroic aspect to it. You're just a dude.
No,
you know, it's not like you're Nathan Drake trying to, you know, fight his way through World War IV or whatever it is. It's just, you know, here are the stories of a bunch of different soldiers if this were to break out. I always thought that was cool about Call of Duty.
But the
it's kind of like how Crash works. You ever seen that movie, Crash? There's a whole bunch of characters in that movie, and it all centers around sort of one sequence of events, but it follows a bunch of different people. So it's more about the event than the people.
Right.
I think that's what that story is, in as much as that story is about anything, it's about the event, and it's not about a single protagonist. It's a pretty modern way to tell a story,
right,
I think.
Here, well, we can move on. I just wanted to basically, my point is that the overarching story in that game is very cookie cutter. Bad man with bombs, attacks world, go get him, you know, and it's like, okay, you got different scenes, but I don't know. I guess I'm looking for more.
In that respect, it's the Michael Bay movie of video games. That's always what Call of Duty was supposed to be, and they do that well. But that's all they're really trying to be.
Anyway, we got sidetracked big time.
All right,
we got to get to releases or something.
I'll just sum up this real quickly.
Numbers
came out for Microsoft's quarterly earnings. Big money made on the Kinect. Their profits are their game division is up 55%. They sold, oh Lord, how many? $3.7 billion off the Kinect.
Nobody cares. Kinect made money.
How did the Kinect make money? Because it doesn't seem like it would.
First of all, how do people, are there enough people in the United States that have living rooms big enough for the Kinect to function?
Like no one on the East Coast.
Right, nobody on the East Coast. Like, I bought one, and I haven't used it yet because I don't know where to put the damn thing. Like, where do I put that? Where am I going to play Dance Central? On top of my coffee table? Are you kidding me?
Dude, I'm in Mississippi. I just play it in my field. That is my home.
You hook your Xbox, your TV up to your ox. Just twirl it around on a
Kinect farming.
Yeah, I think it's... I guess people just want... I feel like, you know, recession's over. People want to buy shit, I guess. You know, it seems like...
I think it's also a testament to how fed up people are with the Wii, is that we will buy waggle controls over again for something else.
I don't think... You think there's a lot of Wii 2 Xbox, you know, ship jumpers? I mean, do you think there's a lot of that? It doesn't seem like...
I think so.
It seems like if you bought the Wii and you didn't play, you're not going to be like, oh, this is so different. I'm gonna get this.
I mean, all the people I hang out with are like really hardcore gamers, but everyone that I know that has a Kinect or a PlayStation Move right now also has a Wii and no longer plays it.
Yeah, I think what it did is enticed a lot of the core gamers away from, or even if they didn't have motion controls, it's like, okay, I have my Xbox and this Kinect came out, and there ain't gonna be another Xbox for another 10 years or whatever. I'll just get that. That sounds good. I'll get that for Christmas. I don't think there were a lot of, because a lot of the people that have the Wii, like, the Wii is the Wii. There is no concept of other consoles or even other games to these people. It's just the Wii, and that's all. There may be a couple that jump ship, but I don't think they cannibalized a lot of their market share.
Right. All right, well, now let's move on to releases.
All right, this week in releases, we've got Earthrise, post-apocalyptic MMO that takes place after the Third World War.
Woo.
And apparently, all the soldiers are female and wear spandex. That looks awesome.
Women!
Frontlines. We've got Call of Duty Black Ops, First Strike. It's a map pack, multiplayer maps. We've also got Shadow Harvest, Phantom Ops. Head to the conflict areas around the globe in this tactical action game set in the future.
If I hear the word tactical or action together ever again, I'm going to lose it.
So far, it's worth noting that 2 out of 3 releases are have the word ops.
Yeah, well, the Black Ops one is the, I guess, their first map pack for the big black. Did any of y'all play Black Ops?
Uh-uh.
I didn't, actually.
I played a little. It's like, I done played this game.
Man, I actually got kind of excited about Black Ops because there is no enemy that's cooler than the Russians. Except maybe Hitler. Like, Hitler was pretty cool, but he's pretty cut and dry. Like, the Russians, man, so much mystery and shit. What's going on over there? Nobody knows.
Yeah, like Nazis are played out. Like, Hitler himself, still a cool villain.
Yeah, especially the disembodied robot head of Hitler as it appears in, what's that game?
Smash TV?
Smash TV. Yeah. No, it wasn't Smash TV. It was the other one.
Total Carnage.
That's it.
All right, that's so also in releases, we've got Castlevania, Lord of Shadows, Reverie on Xbox 360. I don't know what that is.
What is that, Justin Fick?
This is the, I believe it's the, it's got something to do with the, I think it's a new 3D Castlevania, which means don't bother.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I played the 3D one. That tape's pretty good.
Wait, is this like an expansion pack?
I've never liked the 3D Castlevania.
Oh, yeah, it is the expansion. I'm so dumb. That's the last game I bought, Castlevania Lord of Shadows. Dude, this is the expansion pack to that. That game was pretty good.
Dude, I played so many God of War clones at this point. It's like, I'm done. You know what? I got a whip in this one. Ooh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, the combat was pretty generic, but...
The thing is, you kind of got a whip in God of War, too.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. I mean, I thought it was, like, the production value's real good, all the environments real pretty, story was all right. I enjoyed it. That was pretty good.
All right.
I'm not going to, like, shit all over just because it's got...
There's only so many God of War ripoffs that I can play before I start trying to dig out my own esophagus with a sharpened pencil.
Yeah, I'm pretty done with QuickTime-based
combat. Yeah, man, I was playing, anytime QuickTime events come up now, it's just like, I hate this. Stop!
QuickTime events are the designer like rolling over and saying, "I'm done." We're just gonna put this in and ship it.
Speaking of,
honestly, call me super snobby. Like, as soon as I'm playing a game and I see light attack and heavy attack, I'm done. I played this before.
Speaking of things I've played before and I'm done with, The Sims Outdoor Living. More shit for your outdoor stuff. Justific, what's the rest?
All right, so we have Bionic Commando Rearmed 2.
Did the first one do well enough to necessitate a second?
The thing is, like, a lot of people like the first one, and it's a piece of shit.
I hated it. Yeah. I can't jump.
I don't like it. It was garbage.
I don't like that game because I cannot jump.
Well, I mean, you couldn't jump in the original.
I know you couldn't, and it's exact copy of the original. I don't like the original either. I want to jump.
That's true.
The thing is, like, they kind of took, like, the nostalgia of the original, well, the first Rearmed anyway, and they did not improve a single one of the broken-ass game mechanics in it. Like, I think that their whole team looked fondly back on Bionic Commando as, like, the Duke Nukem of the NES days, and it was kind of a shit game.
Yeah, you don't have to follow it exactly. You know, guess what? Bionic Commando is not, like, the end-all be-all of retro gaming.
That's true.
You can fix some shit.
I thought it was a pretty well executed game in terms of its production quality, though. It was real pretty.
Oh, right.
It looked real good.
But I mean, like, as soon as the first boss came on Bionic Commando Rearmed, and it was one of these things where it's like, do this thing, to expose his weak spot, damage him, repeat three times, like, throw a barrel at it, and then repeat that three times. I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, like, just stop. And, like, done. No. Light attack, heavy attack, I'm done with it.
Yeah, I guess that's all. I guess that's basically it for releases this week. Not too much. We had Dead Space last week, so that's something fun, I guess. Ooh, have you guys played that yet?
It's so scary.
The thing is, I haven't beaten the first one yet. I need to go back and do it.
Dude, the game's so good. The second one, though, I'm like, I don't know, I guess I just get burnt out after I played something. Then again, I guess Dead Space is just a copy off Resident Evil. But
now, y'all, I haven't played either one of them. But William Miller's good. Thinking about playing them. Should I get the first one and play that first?
You know what? I'd say at this point, just get you two, you know?
Get me two? Okay.
Because you don't play nothing. You just you get it and you never play it. Maybe if you got two, you'd actually finish it.
But I like the idea of one. It's in it like Haunted House in space.
Yeah, basically. You're on the USG Ishimura.
Yeah, I like that. That's pretty cool.
It's a big ghost ship in space, basically. I mean, it had a cool plot. I thought it was the game of the year, whatever year it came out, but the sequel, it's like, I don't know if you can recapture the imagination of the first one.
Well, see, you're making me lean toward the first one.
Personally, I would get the first. I mean, I haven't played the second one, so I couldn't tell you, but like, I enjoyed the first one. I played it through maybe, I don't know, halfway or so.
All right, so here's a question for y'all, and I'll open this one up to the audience, too. William Miller was just given the Valve code a couple days ago.
Oh, Lord.
The Valve code gives access to all Steam games, past and future. Right? So, man, I have this entire library at my disposal. Which game do you think I should play first? Don't say Portal. Like, you dare say Portal.
Dude, Half-Life 2 is all you will ever need.
I played a little bit of that. I played that.
You never played all the way through. Oh,
no, I said I will play that through.
Dude. We talk about games and story. Like, that game is, like, perfect in my mind. Perfect. Still trumps most games out there right now.
I think that one might even run on my Mac, too.
It does.
Oh, man. Ooh, shnick.
It's time for judgment. All right, so, Justific, you got a judgment for us, right?
Yeah, I can do a judgment on the only game I've really been playing the last month or so, and that's Minecraft.
All right, now, I see this on the internet. What is a Minecraft?
All right, so
how do it do?
So it took me a very long time to get onto the Minecraft. Like, I've heard about it for the longest time. I've liked it. I've loved the idea. Never really got into it until over winter break when I started playing, and now I'm hooked on it. So essentially,
it's a download game, right?
Yes. Yeah, this is a download game. It's Java based, so it'll run on your Mac, your PC, your Linux. It's a sandbox game in probably its purest form. you have this 3D world. It's sort of like first-person shooter controls. So it's first-person WASD mouse. So it just throws you in this randomly generated world.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have shit. You have you start running around. You punch trees and you punch sheep in the face. And it's like, okay, all well and good. But as soon as night falls, all kinds of shit starts coming after you. So zombies and skeletons and just all kinds of things that are just designed to fuck you up.
Okay, so hide. The mechanic is hide.
Yeah, the mechanic is run and hide as fast as you can. So as you are punching, for instance, the dirt and the trees and stuff, this is all 3D tiles. So it's all a bunch of cubes stacked on, you know, one another.
Right.
The whole aesthetic really is cubes. So it's a cube sun, cube clouds, everything is cubes. But say you punch a cube of dirt, you can actually then pick that dirt up and use it to build some sort of shelter.
Hmm.
So that becomes your first goal, is to build this little house so you can, you know, jump in and hide while, you know, during nightfall so these things don't kick the shit out of you. And then in the daytime, you come back out and you start punching more stuff and getting more cubes. The really addictive part of this game comes from the crafting.
Okay.
There's a whole system of crafting you can do. So, you know, say you punch a cube of tree.
Uh-huh. Right.
And you have a personal crafting. It's sort of like a Diablo inventory. So you have your inventory of cubes, and you have a 2x2 crafting area. And inside that, you can put your inventory items, and it's sort of like a Herodric cube in Diablo, where you put certain things in, and certain things come out.
Okay.
So you put in cube of tree, you get 4 planks, and then you can put in planks, and you can create, you know, for instance, workbenches, and workbenches give you a bigger area to create more tools, and you can create pickaxes, and swords, and armor, and all this kinds of stuff. You can create furnaces, and you can mine for coal, and there's actually a very deep tech tree to the game.
So you're telling me mechanic one, hide. Mechanic two,
yep.
Make. Hide and make. They should have called it hide and make.
Hide and make craft.
All right.
So it's, but the thing is, it's probably one of the best game experiences I've had in a long time. Just because there's this feeling of exploration to it that I have not felt in a game in a long time. It's similar to, and I don't mean to purposely name drop here for you, Blake Buck, but it's a lot like when I first played Myst for the first time.
Ooh. Ooh.
There's a lot.
What is Rand Miller up to these days? Dude, he just wrote himself into one of his books. He is gone from Earth.
So, like, for instance, you know, last night I was playing until 6 in the morning, and, you know, for instance, I found, you know, I was exploring around, and I found an island that is just completely on fire. I have no idea why, but it's a very cool, it's not realistic, but it's very autonomous, so, like, trees grow with light, there's fluid dynamics for water, you know, for instance, you can go underground, there's, like, water, you know, water and lava flow, and you can mix them and create different kinds of materials, like obsidian, and it's just all these naturally occurring phenomena make a very cool world to just run around and explore in.
And you've also got the game of, like, being able to build shit to attack these, like, night zombies, right?
Kinda, yeah. Like, you can create swords and bows and, you know, so, for instance, I have a sword and I have a bow and arrow and I have a set of armor, and it helps, but the thing is, like, they can still come and kill you. Like, that's kind of the cool thing about the game, is you can make things that'll help, but they're always the threat. Like, for instance, there's these little slime dudes, and they just go fucking, they just go jihad on you, and they'll run up to you and just explode. And there's nothing you can do about it. It will take out all cubes in, like, a huge radius, so they can just come blow a hole in your house if you let them. So it's, I don't know, it's, the monsters are a constant threat no matter what, no matter how far into the game you are.
Justific, I played this game. All right, and I watched some tutorials before I played on how to do it so I wouldn't get, like, killed by the monsters in the night, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to check out this game. And they're like, oh, we need to make you a torch to keep the monsters away. Got it. You got to get coal for a torch. So I'm running around, can't find any coal. Running around, can't find any coal. Running around, can't find any coal. There's no coal in my whole world. So then I dig myself into this little, like, 1-inch cave and hide there as all the monsters come, and then I die. I'm like, well, this game blows. And that was the last time I played it. No, thank you.
I will say something, that this is a game where you absolutely have to go get an FAQ online.
Right.
Like, you just go on the Minecraft wiki, learn the crafting. It's one of those things where it's like, I started playing it at first because, like, knowing that this was out there, knowing all these spoilers were out there, but I was like, I'm going to play it for real and just try to invent these things and try to figure out the crafting on my own. It's impossible.
One thing I really like about this game is that it's an indie game in the truest sense. Like, the guy that made it he's straight from TIG Source. Like, what is his name? Marcus Persson, the Swedish guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, he just made the thing real quick, put it out there. There's the development thread for this game is still on TIG Source. It's a fascinating read. You can go through his development process and all that stuff. Also, another note, our biggest fan, TK, is actually a friend of Minecraft creator Marcus Persson.
Hmm. No shit.
So maybe we could get hooked up with that guy somehow. They're both Swedish, obviously. So everybody in Sweden knows everybody. if you would listen to TK. But yeah, he knows him. So anyway, yeah, it's a great game. I've also got another game I'd like to mention.
Okay.
This game is also a TIG Source game. Came out a little while ago. Justin Fick, you probably played and mastered this game. It's called Super Crate Box.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I love Super Crate
Box. I love me some Super Crate Box.
Oh, my. Whenever I'm frustrated with whatever, I go on and play me like 5 minutes of Super Crate Box. I lose horribly. But there's something about that game that's so satisfying, like all the weapons and sort of the risk reward of getting the crates. So pretty much how this game works is it's a platformer. You're this little man and you're in this one screen room, and there are these mans falling from this hole in the top, and they want to get to this hole in the bottom. And if they get to the hole in the bottom, they respawn at the top. They're real mean. All right. So you don't want to let them get to the bottom, and you got to pick up a certain number of crates that are scattered all over the level. But every time you pick up a crate, you get a new gun. And so if you have a gun that you really like and you're killing all these mans, you're not going to win, because you got to pick up the next crate in order to progress to beat the level. So it's this really interesting, simple risk reward kind of thing. And all the weapons are really, like, satisfying. I don't know, they all have a punch to them that I really like. Oh man, it's just a great game, really well put together.
Yeah, the cool part about that game is you don't get the points for shooting dudes. You get points for getting crates.
Exactly.
So you can get an awesome weapon and just sit there and just kill guys with it, but you're not going to get any points.
Right.
So if you get an awesome weapon, you have to lose it eventually.
I don't know what it is about games made in Game Maker, because that's a Game Maker game, Super Crate Box. But whenever I fire one of those up on my PC, my PC just dies a little bit. Like, I don't know what it is about that engine, but I played a couple. There was an RPG I played. God damn it, I can't think of the name of it now. It was weird. It was like the art style was all over the place and took place on Space Funeral. Justin Fick, you played Space Funeral?
I have not played Space Funeral.
Got to play that. That's an awesome fucking game, Space Funeral. It takes you about 40 minutes to play all the way through it, and it's fantastic. But yeah, that game, I played through that game, and every time I booted up, like, my computer, I could smell the silicon burning, like smoking a little bit.
Dude, that's how Minecraft is when I play. Like, it goes... Like, what's going on? It's made of blocks. What are you doing, dude? Sitting spreadsheet.
That was like a truck.
It's sort of like my seduction sound.
That's your come meeting here. Call. That's similar to Sub-Zero.
Don't you run.
So, William, thumbs up for Super Crate Box then?
Thumbs up. It's a good one.
Justin Fick, what's the final word on Minecraft?
Dude, thumbs up.
All right, anything else we want to add on these two games?
Go get them.
Go get them. I had one, but I'm going to save it for next week since we've gotten two here. Now it's time for feedback. All right, we don't have a whole lot of feedback on today's show, but...
Seeing that it's only been 1 week since we recorded the last show.
I know, we'll wait a little while.
No, like, I thought it'd be funny to read these emails from, like, May 1st, 2010. I'll do the three most recent. All right, so we got one email here from Luke R., and it says, Happy Taco Day. Oh, he sent this on Cinco de Mayo, I see. Happy Taco Day to BDPE, and it is a Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket full of tacos.
Happy Cinco de Mayo. It's coming up soon.
Oh, Lord. Don't remind me. Next email we got is from Dylan F. This was from July 18th. Okay, pay attention to this heat. I drove by the Hollywood movie rental and saw... I can't read this. Man, my face is too far from the screen. How do I zoom in? Oh, come on.
You need that Kindle. You need a Kindle for emails.
I drove to the Hollywood movie rental store and saw a bankrupt sign since the company went out of business. So I was like, heat D go, and I walked in and said they were selling everything for 70% off. I ran in the games section. I immediately was disappointed to find that most of the games were bought, but I did see Skate 2, Top Spin 3 for $4 each, and I got Bayonetta for a measly $13. That's 3,000 gamer score and at least one good game for about $20. Blam jank. P.S. Love the show, especially when there is one. Yeah, us too.
No, that reminds me of when Rite Aid was going out of business in Vegas. Basically, they're selling all their liquor at like 75% off. So all the all the beer was gone, all the liquor was gone, all the wine was gone. But there's an entire shelf just like hasn't been even touched, just full of Tecate Light.
Dude, Tecate is a drinking man's beer. All right, you should know that. It looks like it's got a like a Nazi eagle on the side of it. That's why I like Tecate. Anyway,
it's the beer. It's the official beer of Wolfenstein.
We've also got some voicemails. We got a power on Skype today for the first time in a long while. We have 8 voicemails. They are all from the same person. I'm gonna give you a wild guess of who it is. I'm not gonna play them all because we're gonna sit here for 10 minutes listening to these. So I'll just play the first one in a little bit here.
Where's my new BDPE? I'll be waiting forever. And I miss you guys. I've been drinking a lot, thinking about you guys. And I don't think I can go on anymore without you.
So this goes on a while. He calls back just rambling. He gets to the end here.
A lot of times.
Here we go.
What's up, y'all? This is TK. Sorry for all those creepy messages. I was tired and maybe drunk. I don't know. Maybe. I do remember sending some message. I don't remember, actually, but whatever. to work up my creep factor, I listened through all of the BDPE podcasts for like a third time.
Don't say that.
And I noticed that you tell a lot of stories, like a lot of times, like you tell a story like this dude from bodybuild.com, he came to beat me up, but he didn't. And then like 2 episodes later, you tell it again. And I know you have a little heat book because you said it on the podcast. I know I've been listening so many times. And, I mean, it's bad enough that I've listened to all these episodes over and over again because I'm desperate.
You know, I don't want to listen anymore. You know, you are banned from email or from telephone, TK. I don't like it.
Also, I love how TK is like Donnie Darko when he gets drunk. He just wakes up like the next day and there's like 6 voicemail messages on our machine, and he's drawn like 3 naked pictures of Justin Fick smearing butter on himself.
Well, so that's the end of the show. We've reached the end. We're back. If you want to send us an email, it's feedback@bestdamnpodcastever.com or call the listener line at 845-BATTLE-9. What do you guys think about it? First show back in a while. What do you think?
That was pretty good. Yeah.
I'm digging it. So we should be getting shows out here pretty regularly. Also, check the site, which should be up by the time you're hearing this, at bestdamnpodcastever.com. Also, blakebuck.com will have some fun stuff on it if you want to check that out. So from all of us here at the Best Damn Podcast Ever, I'm Blake Buck.
I'm Wade Miller.
I'm Justin Fick.
And we'll see you next time.